Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. Today, I have the pleasure of bringing you a student activist, a student leader to the Inclusion First podcast. Honestly, I think that it is so important that we talk to not just a diverse set of people, but intentionally seeking out different kinds of diversity and age diversity, to be sure, because we have so many incredible students, so many incredible young people who are doing amazing things, like amazing, amazing things, and getting their perspectives, getting their input, making sure that they are at the table is really critical to us being able to build the world that we all want to see, one with more inclusion, one with more equity. These are our future leaders. And whenever I talk to young people, I am always so inspired. And so I am very, very excited to bring to you another student leader here today. Now, Leah Nepusino, she is 15 years old and a rising junior. She's the co-founder and head of marketing for the Youth for Juvenile Justice Reform. And this is actually how I first came into contact with Leah on a podcast that she was speaking about. I was in the audience and she was talking all about Youth for Juvenile Justice Reform. And I was just blown away. And so she is a research spokesperson for Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Violence Prevention. She is the founder and host of Evidence for Change. She is the lobbying lead for Team Enough California. She does multimedia leadership, social development services, and youth leadership within her church community. She is part of Beauty Beyond Bars, and she's actually the founder of Beauty Beyond Bars. So Leah is into so many things, so young and doing so many things, right? Like really, there's no excuse for any of us to not do something, to not create some kind of change around us, because it really is just as simple as looking around where you are and going and diving into the interests that you have and seeing where inclusion and equity are and are not showing up and then doing something different, right? Creating a way to interrupt that and transform it. And so you can see Leah doing this in her free time when she's not in school studying. Leah says that she is passionate about creating inclusivity within youth activism and utilizing storytelling to make an impact within her community. Clearly, this is the case. Please join me in welcoming Leah to the show. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I'm so excited to talk with you. Leah and I met when she and five of her fellow student activists did a takeover of the Inclusion First Project webinar, and they talked all about how anti-racism is so important in the work that we're doing today and really creating the world that we want to live in. So I'm super excited to have this one-on-one conversation with Leah about activism. And I'm going to ask you to just tell me a little, tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Sounds good. So hi, everyone. My name is Leah. I am a high schooler, first of all, just finished my sophomore year, going into junior year in the summer. But essentially what I do is I am a criminal justice reform, juvenile justice reform, and gun violence prevention activist. And a lot of my work is kind of similar to Carrie, who is here, is just spreading awareness through having conversations. And a lot of these conversations are through a organization I have, which is called Youth for Danger Reform, which I co-founded with a few of my friends who are also really passionate. And it's actually a very diverse and inclusive community that we've created talking about juvenile justice reform, but from the point of view of formerly incarcerated individuals and having their voices be heard. And for the gun violence prevention realm of what I work with is I also have a podcast similar to Carrie called Evidence for Change. And essentially what we do is we interview students all across America and talk and have these conversations about gun violence in America and how it's different and how perspectives are just such a broad spectrum all across America. And there's really no state, no city is the same. So just having people's voices be heard is a big passion of mine.
Awesome. Amazing, Leah. As we've already heard, she is super impressive and is doing so much. So we're going to dive into the nitty gritty, get into the hard questions. And Leah, I want to start with, what does it mean to you to be an activist in 2021? And the second part of my question is, do you consider yourself to be one? I already heard yes, but tell me what makes you an activist as that part B of that question.
Okay, got it. And I think this is a really important question. Like, what does it mean to be an activist? Because I think when the word activist comes up, people have so many different thoughts, so many different opinions. So what I would say, especially in 2021, what being an activist means is being able to empathize with people, being able to not only listen to others and their point of view, but being able to kind of value their point of view and understand where they're coming from, and also take away from those conversations what can you do to change as an individual, and what can you do to generate change in others? How can you utilize that empathy, that human empathy, and generate it into change? And I think that comes from, like, all activists can agree that a lot of their work would probably start from empathy. It starts from learning and educating yourself about these issues, and then kind of taking that action, taking that next step to see, okay, now that I know about these racist, these systemic racism within America, now that I know more about the injustices within the juvenile justice system and about formerly incarcerated individuals, there's honestly so much to cover. But educating yourself, and then what really differentiates activists is that they don't only educate themselves, but after they educate themselves, they then generate that energy into change and contributing to change. So I think that that's what it really means to be an activist in 2021.
That was great. And I love that you kind of hit on a lot of the different layers that activism entails, right? So this idea with starting with yourself and learning and educating, even that just like empathy, like how do you develop empathy for other people, even if their experiences are completely different or foreign to you? How do you figure out how to make that connection and build that muscle is something that is a key part of activism, right? Because you know, we, at the end of the day, we don't want to alienate anyone, even the people who don't agree with us, because if we do that, we're never going to find common ground. And I feel like that was a big lesson that, that Dr. King taught us in his activism. And then I love the part that you said about using the activism to create energy and momentum to like drive change outward. So there's this inside part, and then there's like the outside part, that is super key to the whole process. So I love that answer. I love it. Okay, Leah. So the question that I have for you now is, what does it mean to be an anti-racist, and what does that look like in practice today?
Okay. So before I kind of answer the question, I think that a question that should be answered with that is also, you know, what does like anti-racism, how is it different than one saying, I'm not racist? Because that's kind of a term I'll hear a lot, and I'm sure others will hear as well. And I think to answer that question is, what saying I'm not being racist or I'm not a racist in response to a racist allegation or anything of that sort, is it kind of implies, hey, I'm not, I'm, I myself am not being racist in this situation or something like that, or within that realm. Whereas anti-racism really deals with, I think the key word is recognition. It's being able to recognize, hey, I myself, as, you know, being human, I make mistakes. And in the past, perhaps I did exhibit racist tendencies or racist behavior. But now I'm becoming anti-racist because not only am I not racist myself, but I am also combating racism within others. And I'm having those conversations, having that act, having that action plan in order to inspire anti-racism in other people as well. So I think the big difference between someone saying, I'm not being racist or I'm not a racist, as compared to anti-racism, is not being racist kind of implies denial. Mm. It implies that this sort of racism doesn't exist. Whereas anti-racism is recognizing the systemic racism or internalized racism someone may have, and then making action plans in order to combat that. Mm,
that was really great, Leah. And I love that you pulled in the idea of I'm not a racist, because if we're like, okay, everyone, raise your hand if you agree with this statement, I'm not a racist, like, everyone is going to raise their hand, right? However, and I loved what you said, internalized racism is a real thing. We live in a country that is based on racism, unfortunately. And so that means we all have different flavors of racism inside of us. And this idea of acknowledging it both inside of us and outside of us before we can do anything to start to fix it. And if we can't acknowledge it, then how are we actually supposed to fix anything, I think is the real question. So I love that you brought that up and into the conversation, for sure. That's really great and very wise, honestly, because there's lots of people who will never admit that are triple your age and would never admit that any racism has ever happened inside of them and around them. But we're like, okay, we acknowledge that it's here. And that gives us the power to create change. So, Leah, I would love to hear a little bit about the change that you are creating in the world. We heard just a super short preview of, you know, how you're taking activist action, how you're taking anti-racist action. Tell us a little bit about some of the things, the projects, the groups, things that you're doing. Because one of the goals of this podcast is to help people to see that taking anti-racist action, becoming an activist in your own flavor and version, isn't something that is unattainable. Like, regular people can take these first steps. And so we'd love to hear about your journey as an activist and as an anti-racist as well.
Sure, I'd love to share it. So for the change I've been contributing to most recently, as I've mentioned earlier, is, you know, working with work on criminal justice reform, juvenile justice reform, and gun violence prevention work, and activism. So kind of to give kind of a brief overview of, I guess, where my work started, because I think that would be beneficial for people to hear. Yeah. It started with criminal justice reform, and it actually began in 2019. So I just ended being an eighth grader, just ended being in middle school and entering freshman year. Yeah. And it started with the Social Fabric Initiative, which is led by Tina Medina. It was a super amazing program, first of all. And through that initiative, I learned about the injustices formerly incarcerated individuals undergo, like, not only within the system, but once they reenter society, they have a lot of stigma from others around them. They're not being able to get a job like most people would. They're not being able to support their family. And just learning about that really inspired me and a group of other individuals to team up together and create the organization called Youth for JJ Reform, which stands for Youth for Juvenile Justice Reform. And what was really different at the time is a lot of us in that group, and I would say most, if not all of us, had no prior knowledge about the injustices, and we probably had a lot of, or at least I know I had, kind of stigma against formerly incarcerated individuals, because oftentimes when you especially in the media, you're like, oh, you see someone on the news who commits a crime, now in your head, you think of them as a criminal. That's kind of the title you give them. And that is extremely, incredibly harmful to have that mindset, because you're associating a person for solely their crime. And when you do that, it's not only affecting you, it's affecting other people, because it's kind of, it's an effect where it goes around to everyone. And so what we did in Youth for JJ Reform is we interviewed formerly incarcerated individuals, both from the criminal justice system and the juvenile justice system, and they shared their experiences, and we had conversations about their experiences both within and re-entering society. And they shared kind of solutions of what they thought people can do to better themselves, to help this issue. And touching on the next segment of my work, which is gun violence prevention activism, is it actually started in 2020. So it's kind of like a year after my juvenile justice reform. And both of these, by the way, I'm still working on and working with. But for gun violence prevention activism, it started, I went to the Summer Youth Institute at the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Policy and Research. Wow. And it was an amazing program as well. Definitely. And I got to meet students. It was virtual, but I got to meet students from all over America. And it was honestly an amazing experience, because we talked about utilizing evidence and data in order to embed it in our activism, and then further on, help individuals understand the issue through data. So after that program, the individuals there and the individuals I met there are incredibly inspiring. They're all activists, and it created an amazing community. We had like a white elephant. We talked all the time, and a lot of what my peers in that program were talking about is, oh wow, I've never had a community like this, where I taught, like in my community, I've never had these conversations, or I've never had other youth like me. And this kind of brought me the idea of, oh my gosh, it would be amazing to share this community with others, share it with other people. And that led me to create the podcast Evidence for Change. And essentially what I do in that podcast is I interview my friends, my peers within the Johns Hopkins Center, you know, that program, who I'm still close to and we're still close friends with. And instead of having our conversations on Zoom, the only difference is that they're recorded. We have those same conversations, but we record it and we share it with the world. So essentially what I do is my main goal, my main passion is igniting that same empathy that I had for formerly incarcerated individuals when I was in eighth grade, and showing how that empathy can be generated into change. And hopefully from what we're doing by interviewing, have these, you know, journalism techniques, is sharing these stories in order to cultivate change. So that's my goal at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. I love that it all comes back to human connection and getting rid of the stigmas and the biases and the barriers that keep us from connecting with each other and having compassion and empathy for each other. So that is super cool. And I love how you went out and you were in this amazing program and you were like, how do we keep this going? And how do we share these really dynamic and engaging and important conversations with more people? And you just did it, right? So I think that's one huge step in activism and anti-racism. It's having that idea and then it's just doing it. It doesn't have to start like a huge thing, right? Like, you're recording yourselves on Zoom and you're putting it on podcasts. Like, yes, I acknowledge that there's a lot of work that goes into running a podcast, right? But you can start taking those steps, and before you know it, you have something that you're doing that's out there that's making a difference in the world. So I commend you for that. That's really amazing.
Thank you.
So, Leah, let's talk a little bit about some of the learnings. You have been involved in several different important groups and even topics that a lot of people don't know a lot about, right? So what would you say is one of the most important things that you've learned doing this work, and whether that is with the podcast and everything that led up to that, or with formerly incarcerated individuals? Maybe there's something that goes through both of those or all the things you're doing. What's a big lesson that you can take away that you might share with us?
So you kind of touched on this earlier, but I think a main lesson that kind of connects all of the things I've been doing with juvenile justice reform all the way to gun violence prevention and all of these certain issues and activism work is really at the end of the day, having that and cultivating that human connection and those and empathy and the power of the human capacity to empathize with others and the power of empathy at the end of the day. Because what I've learned is just certain stories, just a certain conversation can have an immense impact on an individual and how an individual perceives or their understanding of the world in general. And it's like, if you ask any activists why they're doing what they're doing, it comes down to them simply caring. It comes down to them being able to empathize with people, being able to understand people. And at the end of the day, it all comes down to that human connection and the power and the good that can come from that connection. So I think that's one of the most important things I've learned is not only have I met such amazing and inspiring individuals, but I've learned that there is hope. There is hope for the future, and there's hope that we can move past these systemic issues that are prevalent within our society.
I love it. So let me know if you feel comfortable sharing one, but I would love to hear one of these stories that was so impactful to you. I mean, you talk about the power of stories and in creating connection and empathy. Is there one that you can share with us just to give us a taste of how something maybe transformed you or really opened up your eyes to something new or different than what you had believed or thought before?
Sure. I have so many in my mind right now that I can think of, but one that really touched me, especially because I think it was one of the first stories or things, stories that I've heard, is actually our first interview in Youth for Deja Reform was with this amazing individual. His name is Ryan, but he also goes by Flaco. And he is a formerly incarcerated individual who is now not only an amazing father, we met his kids as well, which was also really impactful. Got to interview them. But it was also, he is an activist himself for criminal justice reform and anti-racism. So this was all the way back in 2019. But essentially his story is he didn't grow up in the best neighborhood. He is a Latinx man. And considering his background and his socioeconomic status, it did enable him to, as a young kid, he would be more likely to enter the juvenile justice system. But through the juvenile justice system and his time within the system, he kind of realized, hey, this is not how I want my future to be. This is not what I want for my family. This is not what I want for myself. And through that, he found a great, immense love for writing and an immense love for poetry. And in particular, he wrote, he said he literally wrote on like napkins and toilet paper. He would write down poetry. And once he got out of the system, he began to share that poetry with the world, and he has various publications of beautiful, beautiful poetry. You can listen to it on our interview to have a little snippet of it. But through he shared with us in that interview some of his poetry and shared his experiences, because something I think is so beautiful about poetry is it can just be such short, succinct lines, but within those lines, there's just so much power and so much depth. And through that, what he does today is he's actually, I believe he's going to UC Santa Barbara. And he's just such an inspiring individual. And all the work he does for the community is incredibly inspiring. And especially that being one of the first interviews we had at Youth for JJ Reform really deeply impacted and inspired me.
I love that. You know, I've had other guests come on and talk about these connections that happened and these like assumptions that you make about certain kinds of people, but then your assumptions are blown out of the water because at the end of the day, we are all people with this huge range of capability and skill and passions and dreams for our lives. And so I think this is another great example of like, oh, you'd be like, yeah, this person, because of these stigmas, right, that we associate with anyone who's been in any of these systems, like, oh, they wouldn't be like this. But then this beautiful poetry is coming from this person. And it was a total bridge to him to help him to move into a life that he wanted, right? Like he decided that he didn't want to stay in the system or go back into the system and use this thing as a bridge. That's like, you know, just one of the benefits, right? Because he's creating these beautiful messages and this beautiful poetry for the world to enjoy and be uplifted by. So I totally get why you told us that story. It's super inspiring. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Leah. I love it. So Leah, I would love to hear, I've got a couple more questions for you. So, you know, we've been in this pandemic for over a year now. We've had all of this crazy racial unrest. We've had a crazy political season. It's just been hard. It's been tough on a lot of people. And I would love to hear, like, who or what are you inspired by? Like, what keeps you moving forward when it gets hard, when it gets discouraging, when, you know, things get dark? How do you stay uplifted and how do you keep moving forward?
Ooh, okay. This is definitely something I have to admit I've struggled with, especially, you know, when you hear all these stories, it can sometimes be, it's not always has a, that storybook happy ending, but I think something that continues to uplift and inspire me is honestly meeting other youth activists and having those conversations, like I've said, you know, that group, that really simple group chat that's always really active from the Johns Hopkins program, having just talking to other youth and knowing, okay, wow, I'm not the only one that cares about this. So-and-so cares about this as well. And just having that sense of community within activism, because there is a really great sense of community, which I'm so incredibly thankful for. I would say really uplifts me and inspires me, especially we talk a lot about mental health, having those checkups with one another, not only with activists, but just my, you know, friends in general, having those mental health checkups, asking, you know, not like, are you really okay? Like, how are you doing? I think can be amazing, you know, just making those human connections and reminding yourself it's okay to not be okay.
Yeah. So again, the human connection and being able to find like-minded people so that you know that you're not alone and that there are the people that care about the things that you are. And I know earlier you mentioned, you know, having hope and keeping hope. And so I think that, you know, that's something that to hold on to as well. And so thank you for sharing that very much. Thank you. Okay, so Leah, what is next for you? How are you using your unique skills and talent to continue to drive change? Anything that you're cooking up, anything that you're growing or building on from all these amazing projects that you're a part of?
Ooh, okay. So I've definitely been thinking about this a lot, especially because it's summer. So I definitely have a lot more time on my hand as compared to as I would be in the school year. But I think one project I've been kind of working on is Evidence for Change, I talked about earlier. It's relatively new. So just interviewing as many individuals as I can. Kind of my goal is to interview at least one individual from every state. And there's 50 states. So I'm just trying to. Yeah, that's definitely a big goal of mine. I think I've interviewed about 4 so far. But I definitely have a list of individuals going down there. So keep you updated on that. Please. And then, of course, and something else I've been working on recently is it hasn't been released yet, so I won't be talking about like the name or anything specific, but it's it's an initiative for women particularly behind bars. So it's kind of stems from my work with criminal justice reform and juvenile justice reform. And essentially the mission of that is bringing beauty behind bars and beyond bars. So oftentimes within the system, as many know, the people don't have, or individuals don't have, they have a lack of hygiene products. Like as I talked about earlier, Ryan Erflakel, he was quite literally using toilet paper to write down his poetry. So really what Beauty Beyond Bars and that whole initiative I'm aiming to start very soon is essentially bringing like redefining what beauty means, but also bringing that to minorities, and in this particular targeting women in formerly incarcerated or incarcerated women within San Diego, and giving them the beauty, the hygiene products, not because they need them, but because they have the ability to uplift them. And just showing them that they are deeply loved by the community, that they have a community, and creating, they're hoping to create that community for them. So those are kind of the things that have been on my mind recently, and have been working on reaching out to those centers within San Diego, detention centers within San Diego, and also working on Evidence for Change. So that's just what I've been up to recently.
This is incredible. Leah, I love that you are a doer. You get an idea and then you go and do it. And all of your ideas center around helping other people, and not just any people, but really like the disenfranchised, right? The different minorities, people who are on the margins, and helping to like let them know that they're loved. I love that you said that, and bringing them back into the fold of the community and the connection that is so important. As we, you know, have the opportunity here to rebuild this world, we're in this very interesting, I mean, another transition, right? And what are things going to continue to look like? And how do we reshape things so that it doesn't go back to normal? Because there's so many things that we didn't like and that weren't working. How do we create a new normal that really reaches our arms out to all people, regardless of your situation or circumstance? So I think that, again, this is so inspiring. And you know, the biggest message that we get, if you watch the news, which I don't, but if you do watch, you get this message that the world is going to hell and that everything is terrible and there's no hope. And whenever I talk to youth and young people, I know for certain that that's not true. I mean, there's lots of other people you can talk to as well who are doing big things, but you, Leah, and your generation, your cohorts are the future. You're the future leaders. And so if you're thinking about these things already, Leah is about to go into her junior year. She just finished her sophomore year, and look at all the things that she has already accomplished. It's so freaking amazing. It makes me so happy and so hopeful. And anything that we can do here at the Inclusion First Project to support your work, please never, ever hesitate to ask for sure, because we are definitely Team Leah. We're Team Leah for sure. So last question for you, Leah. You've been sharing all these incredible things that you're doing, how you are embodying anti-racism, how you're embodying activism. For those people who are on the sidelines or maybe trying to dip a toe into stepping onto this path to really finding how they can make their unique contribution, what advice would you give to them to help them to get involved and to take action?
Okay, so I think the three key words that come to mind in answering this question, or what I really want people to take away from this interview, is education, empathy, and action. So the reason why I say those three words is because they're kind of in that specific order. But number one, as we talked about earlier, educating yourself, and also recognizing and examining, have I made any racist behavior in the past? Is there anything, is there any racist behavior? What's the racist behavior, systemic racist behavior within my workplace, within my community? And then next, empathy, talking to other people, educating yourself, and not just understanding your point of view, as we said earlier, in education, but understanding others' point of view and understanding, you know, talking to people of all races, of all backgrounds, and so on and so forth. And then the third step, I would say, for that person who wants to get involved is taking action. And where that comes from, I think, as I said earlier, taking action, it does take initiative, but it really starts with just learning and doing. There are so many resources for you. Here, I'm always here to reach out. I'm sure Carrie is also here to reach out and talk if you DM. But honestly, just go out there. If there's conversations you're having, share them with the world. If you love writing, go write about these issues. It really deals with knowing yourself, knowing your passions, knowing what you're passionate about, and cultivating and generating those passions, combining it with that empathy, and then formulating it into action. And I think that is really a key takeaway I would love the audience to have.
Leah, that was so well said. I'm going to leave it right there. I don't have anything to add to that. that sounds like three amazing steps that you can just, you know, simply take and do. So Leah, if people want to follow your work, they want to follow any of your projects, where can they find you? Where's the best place to see what you're doing and how everything is going as you bring change into the world?
Okay, so I would probably say my primary use of social media would be on Instagram. So audience, you can follow Youth for JJ Reform on Instagram, also Evidence for Change, and you can follow myself or my personal account, which is at Leah Nepo. Always feel free to DM me if you have any questions, or DM any other of those accounts, since I do run them, if you have any further questions. I'm always down to have a conversation.
Awesome. Leah, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your stories with us. Thank you for sharing your perspective, and thank you for being on the Inclusion First podcast.
Thank you. I loved having this conversation with you.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to theinclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.